This tighter testing timetable provides an added degree of protection as scientists continue to study the Omicron variant.
New COVID-19 testing restrictions. It's Monday, December 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Gasquet in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Omicron variant's effect on travelers, Afghanistan's growing humanitarian crisis, Australian Parliament sexual harassment report, European Union global infrastructure plan, White House Christmas lights. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As cases of the Omicron coronavirus variant continued to spread in the U.S., President Joe Biden announced stricter coronavirus testing requirements starting this week for international travelers entering the country. He also outlined an extension of mask requirements on public transportation and a pledge to deliver 200 million more doses of the COVID-19 vaccine to other nations in the coming months. VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has this report.
Planning to visit the United States? Be prepared to follow more stringent COVID-19 protocols. In addition to being fully vaccinated, starting next week, inbound travelers, regardless of nationality, must show a negative test within one day of departure instead of 3 days under the previous rule.
This tighter testing timetable provides an added degree of protection as scientists continue to study the Omicron variant. And we are extending the requirement, both internationally and domestically, to wear masks for travel on aircraft, trains, public transportation, through the winter months.
President Joe Biden announced the measures Thursday, together with plans to increase vaccine and booster outreach for seniors and children and making COVID tests free and more widely available, a multi-pronged strategy to deal with the new Omicron variant and avoid lockdowns. An individual who traveled from South Africa tested positive in California on Wednesday, the first Omicron case detected in the U.S. The Biden administration has restricted travel from 9 African countries, including South Africa, where the variant was first detected. In the next 100 days, the U.S. will also send an additional 200 million doses of COVID vaccine abroad.
I'll always make sure that our people are protected first, but vaccinating the world is not just a moral tool, a moral obligation that we have, in my view. It's how we protect Americans, as we're seeing with this new variant.
Doses will also be sent to conflict zones and other humanitarian settings such as refugee camps, part of a deal brokered by the administration between Johnson & Johnson and the international vaccine sharing mechanism COVAX to immunize people not reached by government programs. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
We work through trusted global health partners like the United Nations, other NGOs that are trusted who can get humanitarian assistance and aid, including vaccine doses, into communities.
A recent Duke University analysis said that to reach the UN's year-end goal of vaccinating at least 40% of the world's population, low and lower middle-income countries need an additional 650 million doses beyond what they are scheduled to receive from COVAX. Krishna Udayakumar is the founding director of the Duke Global Health Innovation Center at Duke University.
That might seem like a lot, but we have also projected that high-income countries, so members of the G7 and European Union, will likely have more than 800 million excess doses available that they can reallocate after taking care of domestic needs, after taking care of boosters.
While equitable distribution of doses remains an issue in many parts of the world, the bigger problem may be skepticism that COVID vaccines are safe and effective. The Biden administration says it is also helping other countries overcome vaccine hesitancy in their population. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Find more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Myanmar junta chief meets Suu Kyi party stalwart. 5 reported dead after Myanmar security forces ram car into Yangon protest. U.S. not panicking over China's newfound military might. Supporters of ex-Bangladesh PM demand she be allowed to travel for medical treatment. Putin to visit New Delhi amid spotlight on Indian defense purchase. Find complete coverage on all these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia on this Monday. At least 14 people have died and 7 are still missing following the eruption of the highest volcano on Indonesia's Java Island, officials said Sunday. Rain pounding the country's most densely populated island and beyond has hampered search efforts for the missing and survivors. Meanwhile, Mount Semeru volcano is spewing lava and gas down its slopes after Saturday's sudden eruption, when ash shooting more than 12,000 meters up into the sky instilled panic in survivors. Several villages nearby were covered with falling ash. The head of Indonesia's geology agency said that a thunderstorm and heavy rain for several days caused the eruption atop the 3,676-meter Mount Semeru. It's been nearly 2 years since COVID-19 was first reported in China, and now a fresh round of travel restrictions is affecting millions around the world. VOA's Saqib U-Islam reports on the hurdles travelers are again facing and the controversy over the new restrictions.
American Portia Steele was halfway to Kruger National Park outside Johannesburg when she heard about new U.S. travel restrictions targeting South Africa, where the Omicron variant of the coronavirus was first detected.
I was getting text messages from my friends and family about how they were restricting travel in the UK, expecting maybe that they would restrict travel back to the US.
Steele shortened her first ever trip to South Africa from 10 to only 2 days and booked 4 different flights back to United States before the restrictions took hold.
A lot of U.S. citizens tearful at the United counter, at the Delta counter, at the KLM counter, trying to figure out ways to get home.
Steele was required to have a vaccination card, a negative COVID test, and a negative rapid test at the airport to board a flight from Johannesburg. In the U.S., she was greeted by officials with the Center for Disease Control, given a self-testing kit, and then went into self-quarantine.
Traveling during the COVID era is knowing that things can change at any given moment and that people have to be malleable. Yeah, just caution to anybody, just be flexible because you never know what's going to happen if you're abroad.
But nearly 2 years into the pandemic, some are questioning if the sudden travel restrictions are effective.
So I think the travel restrictions really are not helping us at all and are probably counterproductive.
Dr. Patrick Jackson is an infectious disease researcher at University of Virginia. He says it's almost certain that world will see more coronavirus variants in areas with low vaccination rates like South Africa. He's calling on countries to focus more on getting people vaccinated than on restricting travel.
One of the major failures of our pandemic policy so far has been not giving vaccines to the developing world and ensuring that the global population can get vaccinated.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is the country's leading infectious disease expert and president's chief medical advisor. After the first U.S. Omicron case was detected days ago, Fauci renewed calls for people to get vaccinated and defended the new White House travel restrictions.
No one feels, I certainly don't, that a travel ban is going to prevent people who are infected from coming to the United States. But we needed to buy some time to be able to prepare, understand what's going on? What is the nature of this infection? What is the nature of the transmissibility?
More than 30 countries have closed their borders and more have imposed stricter measures in response to Omicron. As researchers try to learn more about this latest variant, officials say it's imperative that more people around the world get vaccinated. Saqib al-Islam, VOA News, Washington.
Still to come on VOA Asia, new warnings about the growing humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. Happening now in Asia, angry villagers have burned army vehicles in protest after more than a dozen people were killed by soldiers who mistakenly believed some of them were militants in India's remote northeast region along the border with Myanmar. stay up to date with VOA, you're listening to VOA Asia. Continuing now on VOA Asia, the UN Refugee Agency warns humanitarian needs in Afghanistan are rising to epic proportions as winter sets in and millions of Afghans face a crisis of hunger and starvation. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Temperatures in Afghanistan are beginning to plunge below freezing and are expected to drop to minus 25 degrees Celsius. The UN Refugee Agency warns some 3.5 million Afghans forcibly displaced by conflict and war are ill-prepared to survive the bitter cold. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says many displaced families lack insulated shelters, warm clothes, and fuel for heating. He says they do not have enough food and they lack medical supplies and other essential relief.
The humanitarian crisis is escalating daily in Afghanistan. Hunger in the country has reached truly unprecedented levels. Nearly 23 million people, that's 55% of the population, are facing extreme levels of hunger, and nearly 9 million of them are at risk of famine.
Baluch recently returned from a lengthy stay in Afghanistan. While there, he says he witnessed heartbreaking scenes of destitution and desperation. The UN spokesman says he has met single mothers with no shelter or food for their children. He says he has met elderly people who have been displaced and are left to take care of orphaned grandchildren.
One single mother that I met, she has a six-month-old baby, a 12-year-old son, a 10-year-old daughter, and two parents to look after because the husband died in the fighting. So she has to take care of the full family. Her children go hungry. So the two kids, the 12-year-old and the 10-year-old, they have to work.
Baluch says malnutrition levels are soaring, with many children ending up in hospitals. He says the condition of some 3 million malnourished children is very concerning. He warns 1 million of those children are at imminent risk of dying if they do not urgently receive the support they need. This year, the UNHCR has assisted some 700,000 displaced Afghans across the country. It currently is reaching nearly 60,000 people every week. Baluch says the race is on to reach more before the winter snows cut off access to many. He says further support is urgently needed for the UNHCR to continue delivering life-saving aid this winter and throughout the coming year. The funding needs for this ongoing humanitarian operation, he says, amount to nearly $375 million. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Pakistan's Prime Minister told Sri Lanka's president that more than 100 people have been detained in the lynching of a Sri Lankan factory manager, and suspects will be prosecuted with the full severity of the law. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. Australia's centre-right government is being urged to implement recommendations of a report saying a third of workers in the federal parliament have been sexually harassed. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia's Sex Discrimination Commissioner Kate Jenkins has recommended a significant overhaul of the federal parliament's workplace culture. Her report, released Tuesday, called Set the Standard, found that 51% of parliamentary staff members in Canberra had experienced some form of bullying and sexual harassment, as well as actual or attempted sexual assault. The victims were disproportionately women. Jenkins said the situation has been devastating for individuals and undermined Parliament's performance. The inquiry was launched after a former political staffer, Brittany Higgins, said she'd been raped by a colleague in a minister's office. It resulted in a wave of wide-ranging allegations of misconduct in Canberra and beyond. Nikki Vincent, Victoria State's Public Sector Gender Equality Commissioner, is investigating workplace sexual harassment in 300 public organisations, including universities and local councils.
This last couple of years, you know, have really highlighted the issues of sexual harassment and its relationship to gender inequality. Any organisation that's not on alert around sexual harassment these days is burying its head in the sand and is being rather ridiculous.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison called the Set the Standard report's findings appalling. He's being urged by campaigners to implement the report's recommendations, including gender balances among parliamentary staff and politicians, and reducing a culture that tolerates excessive alcohol consumption. Higgins said she wanted to thank the many brave people who shared their stories, which contributed to this review. The man accused of raping Higgins has denied the allegation and is set to face trial next year. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Making headlines in Asia, women's rights activists in the Afghan capital of Kabul insisted Sunday they would continue fighting for the right to education, employment, and participation in Afghan political and social life, and said a recent Taliban decree banning forced marriage was not enough to address the issue of women's rights. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for listening to VOA Asia. The European Union this week launched a $340 billion fund to boost global infrastructure, which analysts say is aimed at rivaling China's Belt and Road Initiative. But can it compete? Henry Ridgewell has more.
The European Union says its Global Gateway Fund will offer billions of dollars to help build high-quality infrastructure, fibre optic cables, road and rail projects, and renewable power, primarily in developing nations. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen spoke to reporters Wednesday.
Think, for example, of investment in clean hydrogen. We have partner countries that have an abundance of renewable energy, think of wind or solar, to produce hydrogen, which is of interest for them as well as us. Or think of underwater data cable connecting to continents.
The fund will offer $340 billion through 2027, with the majority in loans rather than grants. It will aim to build healthcare capacity and invest in education. Again, Ursula von der Leyen.
We want to show that a democratic, value-driven approach can deliver on the most pressing challenges.
It's also about geopolitics, says analyst Jonathan Holslag, a professor of international politics at the Free University in Brussels.
The main objective behind the Global Gateway is to respond to China's Belt and Road Initiative, China's new Silk Road. A lot of European companies have encountered huge competition from their Chinese rivals. I've also seen that countries are sliding into China's orbit.
But is Europe's $340 billion enough to compete? Again, Jonathan Holslag.
China today has a total portfolio of overseas loans and credit of about $1,500 billion.
That financial firepower was on show in Laos this week as the country officially opened a $5.9 billion 1,000-kilometer rail link with Kunming in China, 60% financed with Chinese state loans. For some analysts, the costs of Chinese debt are dangerously high. Greg Raymond is an expert on Southeast Asian politics at the Australian National University.
The COVID situation doesn't augur particularly well for making money out of the railway, and that means more debt and less revenue, less export. To me, when I look at the facts about Laos' economic situation, it's difficult to avoid the conclusion that they're slipping deeper into a kind of Chinese orbit simply because of the economic decisions that they've made.
China has also invested in Europe, buying up ports like Piraeus in Greece and financing transport routes in the Balkan states. After watching Beijing move into its backyard, the EU is offering an alternative. Europe says its global gateway can work in conjunction with the G7 Build Back Better World Infrastructure Fund launched by US President Joe Biden at June's G7 summit. Again, analyst Jonathan Holslag of the Free University in Brussels.
We also still have to see whether developing countries are interested in taking the conditions that are going to be attached to European loans in terms of environmental sustainability, transparency, and so forth. I think they will rather try to play off different donors against one another.
China has not responded directly to the European plans. Earlier this month, Beijing said there is plenty of room for cooperation in the field of global infrastructure. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Finally on VOA Asia, the White House is lit with holiday cheer for this year's festive season, with First Lady Jill Biden's Christmas decor theme of Gifts from the Heart. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
For her first Christmas as First Lady, Jill Biden chose Gifts from the Heart as her theme, and she's filled the White House with tributes to those who have inspired her in the past year. Frontline workers who soldiered through the pandemic, service members who gave their lives, and members of her family and those of previous presidents. First Lady Jill Biden.
For all of our differences, we are united by what really matters. Like points on a star, we come together at the heart. That is what I wanted to reflect in our White House this year. In each room, we tell a story of gifts from the heart. In the East Wing, we see the gift of service with shooting stars representing the frontline workers who brought light to our lives in the darkest days of this pandemic.
This year's decorations echo the theme of the last Christmas of previous First Lady Melania Trump. Trump's final Christmas decorations as First Lady paid tribute to first responders. As usual, the White House pastry team this year spent several weeks putting together a hefty gingerbread display. This year, it includes a school, police, fire, and gas stations, a hospital, a post office, a grocery store, and a warehouse. Executive pastry chef Susan Morrison.
It's all made of gingerbread, royal icing, chocolate, some gum paste, too.
So, I promise I'm not going to do this. Could you eat all of this?
You could, technically, but it's meant for display. So the icing on the outside, when it's exposed to air, becomes very firm like concrete.
Christmas trees have been a White House fixture for more than a century, but it was First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy who started decorating by theme. The First Lady's efforts haven't always been warmly received. Critics howled over former First Lady Melania Trump's 2018 decorations, which included red Christmas trees, with some calling them more frightening than festive. But the First Lady said that while the world may still be scary, the holidays shouldn't be.
No matter how dark the night, when we turn toward that light, we will never be lost. So thank you for helping us share those gifts from the heart. And happy holidays and Merry Christmas from our family to all of yours. We love you. Thank you.
As usual, the White House went big. More than 100 volunteers festooned 41 Christmas trees with 80,000 lights, 6,000 feet of ribbon, and more than 10,000 ornaments. Anita Powell, VOA News, at the White House.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gasquio in Washington. Enjoy the day.